Bye, everyone.
Hello, Andy.
Hey, am I too early?
No, it's okay. You're right on time. We are 4 minutes to 3 p.m. East African time, so you're on time.
Good to see you, Tony.
Good to see you. We've been talking too much on... we've been talking too much on WhatsApp and the like, and here we come.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's exciting. It's good to see you, man, in person.
Absolutely. Absolutely great. Am I clear enough, George, or do you think I should turn on the other light? I had one on.
You're very clear. We can see you. We can hear you very well.
Okay. Awesome. Awesome. That's great. So, Andy, how is it going in Singapore, right? Are you in Singapore now?
Yes, Singapore is good. You know, I look at the crypto prices, it's pumping up. It's also good, you know. So,
okay. Life
is great, man. How about yourself?
Well, wonderful. Turns out that I'll be coming to Singapore the third week of February.
Third week of February. Oh, that would be great. Let's catch up. Let's catch up in Singapore, man.
Yeah, I'm coming in on the 19th. And we'll be there from the 19th to the 24th.
Okay. That is good. That is good. That's the good time when I'm still in Singapore. So I just want to let you know, first week of February, I'll be in Dubai. And then last week of February, I'll be in Dubai as well. You know, so third week is great. Third week is great.
Yeah, we'll, and I don't think Singapore is such a very big country that I can't locate you.
Singapore is very small. Singapore is very small, as you know. Yeah, so let's meet in Singapore. You know, okay. I will introduce you to some good friends as well.
Super, super. Yeah, I'm coming to kind of explore the startup ecosystem and see what lessons I can pick and try to push them through for Kenya.
True. Let me know if you need anything. Don't worry about it. Just let me know. You know, I can make some good connections and then I can introduce you to some friends. You know, if you need funds, if you need the incubator, let me know. I run a fund myself as well. There's a lot of synergy that we can have.
Absolutely. Wonderful. Wonderful. Yeah, I'm keen on the incubation programs, yes, fund, and also the government policy environment and strategies that are in place, because we're looking to set up a number of things in the coming years. So there's some lessons I would want to pick.
Sure, no problem. I'm very close with some of the governmental departments. You know, I'm also a licensed fund manager, so I work very closely with the finance side of the things. Uh-huh. So let me know.
Okay.
Let me know. And then I do a lot of work for on productivity. So that is also another angle. You know, if you're looking at the innovation angle, that's something that we can mm-hmm. work on too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a team that is organizing, and we have a partnership with JICA, I think Deloitte and a few others. So I'll check what they have put in place, and I'll give you some ideas of slots that I can see, and then the areas of interest, and then we can try to figure things out.
No problem. Let's do that.
Wonderful. George, are we there?
Yes, we are there. We've just hit 3 p.m., so we can get started.
So, am I live?
Yes, we are live both on Zoom and also on YouTube. So we should be good to go. I see the traffic is also flowing. Yeah, so we can proceed.
Okay, thanks very much. Great to be back again for our monthly or so webinar series. And great to see people signing up and wanting to participate. We've got a very exciting topic this time round. So my name is Dr. Tony Omwansa. I currently serve as the CEO of Kenyan National Innovation Agency. The Kenya National Innovation Agency was treated as a semi-autonomous government institution. That simply means we are governed by a board, and we have a line ministry that we support, but by and large, we operate in a semi-autonomous way, not directly linked with the government. Now, our mandate revolves around strengthening the national innovation system, and that includes issues of policy, strategies of government, advisory to government on priorities of policy and funding. We look into matters of startups, into commercialization issues. We engage a lot with the academic institutions, universities, TVETs, research centers. We deal with issues of incubation, acceleration, looking through the national funding mechanisms, private sector funding, and so on and so forth. So it's been a great 2 years or so trying to strengthen and set up this institution for a stronger national innovation system. Now, one of our functions is to try and enhance awareness and visibility of this agenda, as well as looking into emerging trends and possibilities that then we can possibly advise government, or we can empower people to exploit some of these opportunities. And one way we do this is to run a webinar series. So we do call it the Kenya National Innovation Agency webinar series, Kenya webinar series. And we do invite guests at different times and engage on different topics of interest. And so today, as part of our webinar series, we want to dig deeper a little bit and connect beyond Kenya. So many in the past, we've hosted guests who are local, and of course, we'll continue to do that. But this time around, we've got a privilege to host a speaker from outside Kenya, and that's strengthening our linkages and explorations. So our topic today revolving around blockchain. We've got one expert whom we reached out through our networks, Andy, who joins us from Singapore. He's a thought leader, and he's been very active in the areas of blockchain. I know he has responsibilities that are intergovernmental, so he advises quite a number of governments in the areas of blockchain. He's an investor. I just had a little chat with him that he runs a fund as well. I know he's an author, and he has a best-selling book, and he's a board member in a number of institutions. So with that little background, it gives a sense that we've got a very capable person to address this topic of blockchain. And I did ask him in the past, you know, what would you want to cover in the area of blockchain? And he looked into, you know, decentralization, reevaluation, the reforms around blockchain, what prospects we have in business in 2023 and beyond. And here we are. So we're going to hear a lot more from Andy. He'll introduce himself more. Maybe I haven't covered enough. I mean, I've not done enough justice to Andy. So Andy Lian, the floor is yours. You go ahead and introduce yourself. And the way we've structured ourselves is that we will have two parts of our presentation. So we'll do about 15, 20 minutes more into the business dimension, and then we'll do a bit of Q&A, and then we'll go again into another section and cover, you know, some of these issues of decentralization and revolution and so forth. And then we'll do some Q&A at the end. So it's now my humble opportunity to invite Andy, and the floor is yours, Andy. Welcome.
Hey, thanks, Dr. Tony. So just a very good evening to everybody, you know, from Singapore. And then it's really a good time, you know, to speak to Dr. Tony. And in fact, we will be meeting in Singapore in about 3 weeks' time, you know. So there's a lot of excitement, you know. So for myself, you know, a lot of the things that I've been doing are all online. You know, I'm a very open person. So most people will know me as a book author. You know, I wrote the book NFT from Zero to Hero. And then right in the earlier days, you know, I started to give advice to governments. You know, started from one country, you know, in Asia, you know, all the way now, you know, into Europe. And then, you know, right now also with Mongolia, you know, giving them some of my digital thoughts, you know, on how you know, how productivity can really spice up to the next level, you know, using good innovations, you know. So this is who I am, you know. On a more professional front, you know, I'm a licensed fund manager. You know, I run a fund that is based out in Singapore. Have invested in a lot of crypto startups, you know, over the last 4 to 5 years. And I continue to do that, you know, because I believe in cryptocurrency. I believe in the technology, blockchain. And a lot of other things have happened, you know, and I've took on multiple roles, you know, from being a member, board member of Hyundai DAC, you know, it's part of the Hyundai Motor Groups. You know, I was the blockchain advisor to Asian Productivity Organization. Those are in the past. You know, right now I give advice to Bybit, you know, have an active stand with the Mongolian Productivity Organization. I also am part of a China-Singapore alliance that is based in Singapore. We network with good organizations and institutions, you know, across the across Asia, especially. So this is what I do, you know. And other than that, I love to you know, write articles. You know, I contribute a lot of opinions, you know, on online recently about Web 4.0, and then I also have a PhD in productivity science. So this is who I am. You know, I love to share and definitely here to answer some good questions that you have, you know, and you know, the mic goes back to Dr. Tony.
Wonderful. Thanks. I think that's well covered. I don't think I would have done enough justice, and that's why it was useful that, you know, Andy, you go ahead and introduce yourself. So, you know, we'll keep this fairly simple as we do our discussions. And I think the first place is to just kind of dig a little deeper into the global analysis of blockchain business. You know, where we've come from, where we see ourselves heading. I think let's get a feel of the prospects and opportunities in blockchain. And so do you want to get started, Andy?
Sure, let's do that. I just want to give a few blanket statement, you know, on how I look at blockchain businesses. You know, I think blockchain businesses as compared to probably 2018 and now, you know, there's a big difference. Where are the differences? You know, you can see that people are no longer saying that, oh, I'm using blockchain technology to clear my daily funds, for example. You know, many of these things have already slowly been inbuilt into financial system, for example. They are also slowly being built into healthcare systems. You know, healthcare is a big thing, you know, and healthcare has a lot of good use cases for blockchain, you know, especially for patients' data, right? Especially for empowering, you know, patients to have their own data. So all these things have already been in the process, and most people are not talking about it, not because they are not using it, it's because they are using it and they find that, okay, you know, it's a very seamless process, you know, for us to use the technology. So this is how it is in my part of the world. So then you know, we will be asking about a few other questions, you know. Then what are the next big things that you can see using cryptocurrency? Well, I would say that, you know, cryptocurrency and the word blockchain, although they are interrelated, but the kind of use cases are very different. So I would say that in the field of blockchain, you know, we would see more automation that is going to kick into the different sectors, from you know, industrial 4.0 kind of full automation, you know, to automation at home using the technology blockchain. But where is cryptocurrency kicking in? You know, how does it work and value add the whole of this whole blockchain ecosystem that we talk about. I think cryptocurrency has a very strong use case in terms of, for example, payment. You know, I have friends, you know, who are in Kenya. You know, they use cryptocurrency just like, well, really just like any normal day. You know, they use it to pay their friends. You know, they use it to pay for food, you know, and it's very seamless, you know, in a digital economy, especially in Kenya. You know, comparatively, if you look at places like Singapore, for example, because we have a very strong financial infrastructure, and a lot of these things have been set in place, you know, since 2-3 decades ago. You know, credit cards are being used, you know, so you see lesser adoption, you know, for cryptocurrency in terms of payment as compared to Kenya. So when my friends told me about Kenya, I'm very excited, because payment and transferring of cryptocurrency is actually the baby step for the business to grow. You know, I mean, you may not see, correct me if I'm wrong, you may not see many businesses on the ground, you know, sustaining themselves using crypto. But the move of using crypto, spending crypto, is already a big plus for Kenya to kickstart, you know, a new digital economy. That's how I look at cryptocurrency. And it is a very big advantage compared to places like Singapore, Hong Kong, per se, because we are living on a two separate kind of a financial system. And is it good? Is it bad? Well, I really think that, you know, countries like Kenya has really a big competitive advantage as compared to many other countries, because how you use your money, how you use crypto, it has made you an extra innovative country. That's 100% for sure. So this is how I look at it. And then on the more global front, you know, coming back to cryptocurrency, you know, how you make the payment using cryptocurrency. Some people ask me, you know, if you are in Southeast Asia, for example, you know, you might be thinking, is there a way we can enhance our supply chain? How we can enhance our whole workflow in supply chain using blockchain technology? I think yes, in terms of traceability, authenticity, blockchain is one of the best back end, you know, to do all this tracing. You know, if we can adopt cryptocurrency on top of what we talk about right now, you will then see a better ecosystem. You know, you pay seamlessly, you are able to track your goods, you are able to track your goods doubly using cryptocurrency. And that's, again, a very big plus point for businesses around the world, you know, especially for places where there's a lot of manufacturing, you know, for example, maybe in countries like Cambodia, Vietnam, and so forth, you know, they want a certain level of authenticity on top of their product. I think blockchain is really a good way for you to start, you know, and again, using Kenya as an example, I do believe that, you know, supply chain, blockchain tracking facilities would be another great area to get into. You know, this is how I look at businesses revolving around this blockchain and cryptocurrency. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks. I think we will keep the engagement fairly flexible. So we'll open for people who may want to ask questions, not necessarily to wait up to the end to ask a question. I think there's an opportunity to pose questions along the way as we go. Maybe I will quickly pose one before we go to the second phase of your presentation to revolve around what is your recommendation or thought process based on interactions you've had around the regulatory environment. You know, government is always going to be wanting to connect to this issue. And then I can also see one hand up. I think you dropped it. I don't know whether that's George, but I'll give you, Andy, just your thoughts around the regulatory environment and the experiences so far you're getting.
Sure, sure. I think this question is very closely linked with how businesses are being run, right? So we have businesses who are very keen in the technology, but very wary of the regulations, you know, how the regulations is going to kick them, you know, kick them hard, you know, when they grow bigger, for example. So these are some of the things that businesses are thinking really hard and trying to solve. But then if you ask me, you know, how is the current regulations like as compared to a couple of years ago? I think right now it is a lot clearer as compared to 2018-17. And regulators are always corresponding and trying to communicate with some of these bigger crypto companies, try to talk to them and get information from them so that they can learn, you know. So I think some of these governments who are more open, some of these governments who are more advanced, you know, they want to learn more, you know. They learn from the bigger exchanges, they learn from the leading chains, and they get the advice from them, okay? And then they will also speak to expert independent ones, you know, for example, like myself, you know, to ask questions that they have in mind, you know, or maybe they thought that is not a very clever ask, you know, if they speak to the exchanges or the chain. So independent advisors and consultants like myself, you know, will be there to smoothen out the process of getting them to understand crypto, to understand where are the pain points and to understand where are the gaps. So these are things that are really happening on the ground, you know, with the regulators. So regulators right now are a lot faster, but they are still playing a very much catch-up game. You know, why is it catch-up? It's because cryptocurrency moves very, very fast. And when it moves very fast, you know, new questions pop up in the regulator's head. You know, they might be thinking, oh, how do we differentiate from transactions from chain to chain? You know, how are the transactions on the centralized exchange being captured? You know, they have a lot of all these questions that they want answers. You know, they also want to know how decentralized networks are going to work. You know, where do we account for some of this decentralized work? You know, can we get tax from decentralization, for example? So these are many questions that regulators have in mind, and they are constantly asking all these questions. You know, they want to know the answers. You know, so this is how I look at things when I deal with different regulators. And also, to be very honest, you know, regulators nowadays, you know, they work very, very closely with not-for-profit organizations. They work very closely with think tanks. They work very closely with the different schools. You know, so for myself, you know, I always want to keep myself in a more neutral position and then try to use that neutral position to give the correct stand to the various stakeholders, including the government. Because government wants opinion, they want consultation that are credible and neutral, you know. So like, for example, you know, schools will reach out to me and say, hey, Andy, do you think we can commission a paper together based on this particular research? Yes, this can be done. You know, it's going to take years, sometimes months, sometimes weeks, depending on the publication itself. And this publication usually is being asked or commissioned by the think tank to the school, or from the government to the think tank to the school, so that this research work, you know, can help them to facilitate some of their thinking and facilitate some of the policies moving forward. That's how I look at it.
Okay, great. I can see one hand. I think we'll just keep it open. I see Eric No, Ed Karani saying, I see a lot of opportunities in the use of blockchain in our tea and coffee value chain. How does a roadmap to trade in these areas look like? I think he's looking for comments around these domains of coffee and tea. And Kenya, we're fairly strong in the value chain of tea and coffee. So we'll take that question. And then I am happy to have Thomas Omweri ask your question. I think you've raised your hand up.
Hello, good afternoon, everyone. Thank you, Andy, for sharing the knowledge with us, and Dr. Mwensa for organizing for the session. Because we are talking about regulation, my question is more of that policy aspect, where governments, of course, would want to have control on what exactly is happening. And to even bring it closer home, for a long time, we have seen financial regulators, like in our case, the Central Bank of Kenya, providing advisories against, somewhat against the uptake and the use of cryptocurrencies because of the volatility and the uncertainty surrounding that. And it goes without saying that governments have a critical role in the advancement of any technology. So in this case, because of the advisories, they have acted like inhibitors as opposed to catalysts in the uptake of this kind of technology. But even amid all these advisories, people, especially in Kenya, have gone against all odds, especially the young populace, to still embrace the blockchain idea. So we are not there yet, but at least a number of them are already getting engaged in that kind of technology. So I'm interested to know if there are any steps, and this is particularly to you, Dr. Mwensa, given you are better placed, to know if there is any significant progress within government to change this stance and begin appreciating that indeed the world is now going towards a different direction. Are they in any way embracing the idea?
Okay. All right, thanks. That's a valid one. We'll come back. And let me take Stacy. And then Andy, I think you can comment across the three, and then I'll chip in as well. So Stacy, the floor is yours.
Hi. My name is Stacy. Thank you so much, Dr. Tony. Thank you, Andy, for this session. My name is Stacy from Kayana, Kenya. Basically, from the conversation, I'm really curious, what have you done in terms of blockchain in community, I don't say development, but management, especially for the scenario where you want to develop a token that the members can actually I don't say a word, but actually it's used to trade in context of the upcoming CBDC. That, how do we align? Because yes, you can discuss regulators, but regulation always changes, but there's the infrastructure angle of it. I'd really love for you to touch on that. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Sure. I hope that was clear for you, Andy. The floor is yours.
Sure, no problem. I'll take on the questions one by one. So first one about coffee and tea and blockchain. So some of you would have read my CV that I used to invest in coffee plantations, and I actually deal with quite a number of roasters and as well, where they want to use blockchain technology to track and trace their coffee beans, for example. So this is a real situation. We have a friend who is very active in East Timor. They want their coffee to have that special tracking mechanism. So each batch has a special QR code that's attached to it. So in the beginning, they are only using QR code, but then, like every one of us, we know that QR code can be easily replicated. So what they have then implemented will be a dynamic QR code, So each batch of coffee bean that they have shipped, they have their own very unique way to account for the various batch, the various package, and the various packaging. And this thing is going to help them because, number one, they are selling premium beans. So when the beans are premium, there's a very big need for people to authenticate and say, oh, is this the real thing? Is this the real brand that we are talking about? So blockchain technology works very, very well on products like this. You know, of course, some of these guys, you know, in the market, they will say, hey, you know, there's always ways for you to track each and every coffee bean. For example, you know, you will definitely see people saying things like this, for sure. But trust me, that is not going to work because it's just way too much work, and it's just no way to really authenticate all these things, you know, from a more sustainable business perspective. So I hope to see that part of things going in the right direction. So don't think too much, just pack them, you know, in the right place, you know, put up easy technology placements, you know, like what I've mentioned is on the packaging, you know, make sure that the whole supply chain is audited and is on the right track. Then I think the simple usage of technology in that manner would be most suitable. You know, this is a real case study. Another case study with very similar product is they also use a similar product, similar way is another Vietnamese coffee brand. You know, so they did the same thing, and it really helps them because there are a lot of other fake coffee manufacturers that are using their packaging. You know, so this is also another good way to differentiate themselves, you know, from the fakes. So this is pertaining to the coffee and tea leaves question. So this is number one. Number two is I think it's about regulations and how new regulators react a bit slower, you know, to some crypto policies. I've walked through the whole process, you know, since 2018 on this whole journey. You know, you should not be too rushed or should not push the regulators too hard. You know, you think that, oh, within the 1 year they are going to give you the right policy, give you the right rules, give you the right framework. It's not going to be like this, you know. And this same decision process is very much similar throughout many different countries, you know, because I come from a advisory background, you know, with the government. I look at crypto bills, I look at crypto policies, you know, I look at the whole crypto legislation, you know, for some of the country. I dare to say that some of this framework, in order for it to be more mature, you know, and more concrete, you know, it takes about 2 to 3 years. And that 2 to 3 years does not mean that your government is not working hard. You know, there's always public consultancy paper. You know, like I've mentioned, there's always think tanks working closer with the regulators. There's always schools working very closely with the regulators. And this is an ongoing process, you know. And again, like I mentioned, you know, maybe taking the case of South Korea regulations, for example, the rules are always changing. Changing for the better, changing for to protect their people, you know. Same goes for maybe in Kenya, you know. The whole process is going to take some time, you know. Meanwhile, you know, while there are no specific regulations, just work within a very compliant framework. You know, don't do anything that is out of the ordinary. Look at it from a more innovation standpoint. You will not go wrong, because when the real crypto bill or policies kick into place, you know, they can't fault you, because you work this around using a proper business framework, you know. And if you have any doubts, you could always, you know, speak to your local leaders, number one, go to the academics, talk to the think tank researcher, and if need be, talk to the lobbyists. because these few groups will actually help you to get some of these voices to the regulators. And then they will take some of these academics, for example, or some of these groups, for example, more seriously than just talking to a community, you know, because you need a strong voice. You know, if you need a strong voice, and for example, Dr. Tony, you know, from a national innovation agency standpoint, and pushing this from an innovation standpoint, a lot of these things can be pushed through a lot easier than, say, a blockchain association, for example, because that kind of anger is very different. You know, Tony, look at innovation, you know, how innovation can kickstart this whole crypto era using blockchain versus technology first, but what's next, right? So it's a very different process, you know, when you speak to the regulators. You know, again, if you need anything, you know, I'm very happy to also give my few cents worth, you know, to how, you know, how things can work around a lot better, you know, with the government. You know, I see Tony nodding and said, you want to add on something, my girlfriend?
Yeah. I mean, you're right in the sense that, you know, change as it comes, we are conscious that, you know, regulators have a responsibility to ensure fairness, transparency, more like a fair playground, and making sure they truly understand the implications of the decisions and the facilitations they provide. So, you know, typically a regulator has that responsibility to be cautious by design, all right? But then at the same time, they're conscious that they need to enable progress, you know, because society keeps changing. So first of all, I think is to appreciate the responsibility of the regulator and the perspective in which they look at things. Because if things fall apart in one way or another, then the regulator, you know, takes responsibility for that. And so it's in our interest to appreciate that. And the second is that the knowledge and experiences are acquired over time. Information from different perspectives analyzed in many ways. It's like a court. If a court is making a ruling about something, you know, they have to listen to all dimensions keenly and carefully, and then enable. It's not a bad thing to be relatively slow. It is just a mechanism of being cautious. I would say that, of course, the Kenya government and the regulator are very much aware of this development, and there's a lot of engagement that is going on towards you know, creating a more enabling environment, and you know, conversations are ongoing, and it's not like they just don't want to hear. The conversations are ongoing, and we do play certain roles, and their level of receptiveness, I think, is good. It's just that now it's a lot of analyzing of data, looking at trends, in order to provide us the best guidance forward. I think that's a fair way to put it, because I also speak on behalf of government at some point, and we are available to provide, you know, information to the regulator and guide, you know, certain perspectives to this.
I agree with you, Dr. Tony. The process is going to take a while, and enjoy the process, you know, and learn more during the process. I think that's one very key thing that we should really look at, you know. So the last bit about Stacey's question was about community, right? So I think you know, when we look at crypto projects, for example, you know, there's a very big element that are community driven, you know. So I still want to come back to the point that, you know, only community-driven projects and projects with very strong community are able to survive through the bear markets. You know, good and bad markets, you really need big community. How do you build the community? You know, you can build it on various platforms from Telegram, you know, to even YouTube or even Facebook. There is no hard and fast rule about that. But in order for a community to be very successful, you need to know your work, you know, because you are there to to work together with the community to build a vision. You know, you are not here for fast money. These are some of the things that you have to really let your community know when you start a project. If you start a project with the wrong kind of mentality and when the mindset is wrong, then you will lose your reputation. You will lose the project and many others will get hurt during this whole process, right? So if you have a strong community who trust each other, know what you're doing, you know, build upon the value of the token, believe the objective of the token, then you have a good community. And this kind of community is not hard to develop. It's just going to take some time. You know, there's no need to rush into building a community, buy robots, you know, buy the fake people and so forth. You don't need to do that. You know, in Kenya, for example, I think what you have is strong, smart, young people, you know, and they know their work. You know, they are not first-time digital wallet user. You know, every one of you are using digital payment, you know. So it's a very easy and a less learning curve as compared to many other countries. Trust me on that. You know, so if you have people who know the technology, use the technology, believe in your objective, those are your core community members. And I believe, you know, Stacey, this is the only way for a project to be successful. Thank you.
Great. I can see lots and lots of questions have come through. So I'll just pick one and then we'll try maybe one or two. So there is a question around Scott Tripp from Canada, who says, being in Canada, I feel I see the growth coming from here as well. So he's talking about Canada. Now, the question is, do you feel blockchain will open trade around the world in an open, transparent way? And how does this path potentially lay out? Then let me take another one that I think maybe you could relate with. Okay, so this is from Rosalind Wanjiru, who says, this is a timely conversation as we need to work towards fostering innovation. In your current work as an advisor, how can companies leverage blockchain technology in building trust with regulators? I think this is the same conversation around regulators. So I think she's looking at you know, how private entities can make that kind of contribution. In a way, I think you've kind of addressed that question, but if you want to add anything to it, that's okay. But maybe you could easily pick up Scott's question around whether you feel blockchain is going to help with open trade around the world.
Sure. I will take on Scott's question first. So I think the word open trade, you know, if you're talking about physical trading and so forth, I don't think blockchain is going to make too much of a difference to open up trade. You know, I still stand by the concept of having blockchain to increase traceability. I think that narrative is something that I think is more practical. You know, opening up trades, I don't think is practical. But if you look at it, not from a cryptocurrency standpoint, you look at it, I mean, not from the blockchain standpoint, but from a cryptocurrency standpoint, yes, it does open up more accessibility across multiple regions. You know, I give you an example. You know, so some of my friends, you know, instead of them trying to send money through PayPal, for example, you know, or maybe Cash App, for example, you know, they felt that it's a lot more timely and a lot more private, you know, using cryptocurrency, you know, and then with that kind of context, you know, friends from across the world, they can send money across the world, you know, ask your friends from Canada, for example, to buy something from you and send it to Singapore, for example. And if both of you has cryptocurrency, you can use that as a form of exchange for the services or the goods. You know, that kind of narrative, yes, I 100% do agree that it happens. And it's actually really happening, you know, in various countries. You know, I see people trading these shoes, for example. You know, I'm also big into shoes. You know, they trade shoes using cryptocurrency, you know, and they felt that is more accountable for, you know, among themselves if they use cryptocurrency to trade. You know, so that opens up new opportunities, like Asia pair of Nike special limited edition. They sell it to the friends in US, for example. So this is an ongoing trade, but it's more P2P. It's more industry specific. You know, so I think yes, to that extent, I agree with you. And then coming to Rose, you know, your conversation around how companies can leverage on the technology to build trust with regulators. I think it really depends, you know. So I have friends who are doing invoice financing, for example. They are using, because invoice financing, there's also a lot of fraud, right? So what they are doing right now is that all the invoice that they are financing, the companies that they are trying to finance and so forth, they leave all the traces of the actual transaction using cryptocurrency on the blockchain. So you see the actual flow of money or cryptocurrency from point A to point B, right? And then that build up a bit of a credibility for their own business. And then they can try to use that kind of information to get more financing. You know, that same kind of a theory or narrative will also work with regulators, you know, because regulators also want credential, you know. And then how are you going to do that? Well, part of it is through your transaction. You know, some of my friends will say that, your master degree can be on the blockchain, you know, so that, you know, when regulators speak to you or where your employer speak to you, everything's on chain, for example. You know, that is also a different level of trust, you know. And then last but not least, you know, companies, what they do, you know, especially in the supply chain, a place where there's a lot of bill of lading, there's a lot of offline work, for example, you know, that can also, blockchain technology can also be used to beef up your own credibility, you know, because you show the real transaction, you know, you show the real payment, you know, again, that is also one way to leverage on the technology to build some trust with the regulators. You know, but having said so, I also need to say this, this one word that I always use in 2018, you know, whatever rubbish that you put on the chain, if it's rubbish, it will be rubbish on the chain. You know, you verify by people think that it's real, but it's rubbish. So the rubbish in, rubbish out analogy will still work in today's context. Same for the technology. So there must be multiple checkpoints, you know, to really gain that kind of trust with regulators. And to be very honest, regulators don't really look at the technology itself. You know, regulators gain the kind of trust with you because you are always there. You know, you say the good things, the right things, and also the bad and ugly things. Because based on my experience, those regulators who like me a lot more because they realize that I do not really say things that they like to hear, you know, because saying things that they like to hear wouldn't bring them the right kind of context and the right kind of information when they decide on a certain policy or they decide a certain action, you know. So you need to be there constantly telling them the right kind of information. And that is the most solid trust that you can build with the regulators, you know. And again, just getting a little bit more on this, you know, some people will say that, hey, you know, I am a wallet, for example, you know, or I am an exchange, for example. How would this technology, you know, help you to build a business case and gain trust from the regulators and they give you a license? I think number one, you need to be 100% compliant. As long as you're compliant, the government or the regulators will look at you and look at your application in a different light. This is number one. Number two, if you are operating as a an exchange or a wallet, your technology are all centralized. Honestly, the government cannot really track because all these books are within yourself. How are you going to give the additional layer of trust when you operate that? The question is, yes, you can open up your books. You know, you can open up your books, show them your ledger internally, prove to them that what you are doing are correct and according to the policies that the government has set and following all the financial rules that were set in place long ago. As long as you can prove that, government will trust you. As long as you can show them and give them a link, let them have access, view only kind of access to some of this data, I think it's good enough for the government to trust you. That's how I look at it. You know, again, you know, these are all real examples that I'm quoting here.
Thanks, Andy. I think now as we gravitate towards closure, because we will aim to end top of the hour, would you want to comment a little bit about how to re-decentralize, re-evaluate, and reform blockchain business in 2023? And then we'll see what other questions we might be able to respond to.
Sure, I'll do a very quick one on that. The reason why I use the word re-decentralize is, you know, if you look at how people are talking about decentralization, right? I believe there are groups, you know, on the ground, lobbying group on the ground, they'll say that decentralization is about getting rid of governments. Decentralization is about getting rid of banks. I don't need them, you know, but I have to say this, you know, I'm really sorry that I don't think that is the kind of decentralization you want. You know, to a certain degree, you will still need them. To a certain degree, they are good fallback parties that you can rely on, you know. So let's not go to that kind of extreme decentralization right now. And the word re-decentralize is mainly to remind people that decentralization is not going to the extreme. Decentralization is giving people the power, also giving you an oversight on how things can be like and can be better, you know. So I always say this, you need time to reform, you know, some of these crypto policies. You know, you need some time to revalue, you know, how cryptocurrency, for example, how decentralized per se is going to benefit, you know, your country. You know, so that's the reason why I keep saying this, because in order for you to be really decentralized, you really need to understand how the data is flowing right now. You know, can the artificial intelligence make the decision for you? Maybe, right? Can you make decisions for yourself? Of course, right? But you have to make the right decisions. Take the right steps to look at decentralization and not taking the fast route and create more disturbances, you know, fake decentralization, you know, bad DeFi projects. Unsustainable DeFi rewards, unsustainable DeFi revenue. So all these things goes back to the word re-decentralization. Because if you are truly a believer in decentralization, you really need to work towards a more proper model that can sustain the business in the longer run. And I do believe that this is something that is really lacking in the space right now. There are too many talks, very little action. And when there are actions, they are all fluff. You know, it's all not real. It's just hype. And it sounds like a Ponzi scheme. So we need to have real substance, real innovation in order to sustain the whole business model that we are talking about right now. And this is the thing that businesses need to have. You know, if you want to adopt blockchain technology, you need to understand that you need that technology, not because you adopt that technology and the government gives you a grant, right? That is wrong, okay? It should be always be business first. Make sure there's a business case before you even think about a grant. So similarly for blockchain technology, you need to have a good use case. You need to have a good business. you need to know where you earn your business from and not from purely getting new people to buy new tokens to keep the project going. Because if you do that, then there is no different from a Ponzi scheme, right? You need to find a way that you can sustain and earn your dollar. If you can do that, I think you will have a successful business in 2023 and beyond. And is it really difficult to do that? I don't think so. You just need to keep things simple, right? Find the right partners and find the right place and the right industry for you to start this whole journey. You know, if you start this right, there are many, many different ways that you can assume and get yourself on a more global stage to put your ideas to more people. And when that happens, you are another step closer to success. That's how I look at it.
Great, thanks very much. I will take one question from Dennis here, who says that as much as we are embracing blockchain and cryptocurrency, what is the impact of blockchain on consumer privacy and security?
Okay.
You can see the question.
Can I take that? Or
yes, Tony, yes, you take that. You go ahead.
Sure,
go ahead.
Sure. Yeah. Sure. So I think, you know, when we embrace cryptocurrency and embrace blockchain technology, please do not forgo your privacy. Yeah. So this is one straightforward message that I really want to share. You know, and then when you talk about privacy, about how blockchain technology can provide more private, really maybe the real right word is just more privacy for you. You know, if you are running a business, for example, you know, and you are like myself, you know, that do I have much privacy? Not really, but am I giving away my numbers, my ID number, my address? No, I'm not, right? So this is one way for you to put your face out in the space, letting people know and educate them the right kind of information by showing your face. So this is a totally dox model, you know, so you show who you are and so forth. But there are many people who prioritize privacy over everything else. So they stay as a meme, right? So you can see a profile picture, it'll be a cartoon face and so forth. You know, that is their way of protecting their privacy, you know. But then again, do you really trust people who are hiding behind a profile picture? You know, are you able to understand, you know, the kind of mentality behind some of these guys? Because to be very honest, people who do not dare to show their face, you know, they could be very shy, for example. You know, but then the other thought would be, well, could it be because they are trying to scam you, right? So I think these are all very different privacy protection. These are very different security mechanism that you can help with yourself, you know, moving forward. You know, we embrace technology because we believe in it, you know, and we embrace technology because we believe that the impact that the technology can bring to the consumer will be a lot more, right? So security wise, I think it has to be 100% secure. You know, some of these blockchain or some of these smart contracts are being hacked, you know, but when they hack it, they could not actually extract a lot of other private information too. So again, that's the beauty of the technology, you know, and that's the kind of a fallback plan that you have, you know, and again, you know, blockchain and how the whole maybe enterprise software and how the whole system works, you know, there are multiple layers, you know, as long as the security is done properly, you know, on the most basic layer, I think you normal consumers should be safe. And if your data are all on blockchain and is well encrypted, you know, and is a proper blockchain with a proper nodes, you know, I think your privacy is very much protected, you know, in that sense. You know, so hope again I answer some of this question, you know, in the right framework. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm now curious. I mean, I sampled the questions that you could respond to, and I want to pose to you a question around training and capacity development on issues of blockchain and cryptocurrency, where you're seeing the academic systems moving. I mean, in this case, I'm looking at universities, you know, TVETs. Are there courses that people are taking? What's the trend, how the careers are emerging in this regard, and what you see the role of institutions of higher education in the future of this kind of technology?
Sure. I think this is a very valid question, because I always believe in nurturing the young, and nurturing the young starts from education, you know, whether it's going to be a bachelor's degree, a master's, or even a PhD. I think that's a very good time for people to, you know, to interact, learn, and share, right? So first of all, I'll give you a little bit of background. I used to be the chairman for esports association. You know, we try to champion esports as a degree curriculum. Sounds crazy, right? You know, but it happened. You know, we did it. We make it happen. And it become a former course, former degree program for esports. You know, people, kids playing games, and they turn, make it into education, teach them how to do esports management, sports management, and so forth. Okay. So same thing, you know, for blockchain. You know, the journey is this. You know, there are multiple tracks. Track number one is people who are looking at becoming a developer, right? You can learn Python languages. You know, start as a developer, right? You can also, from the developer side, you can also learn how to look at user interface, user experience. Then you can look at the technology side of things into security, for example. So that could be one stream, you know, where people are more towards the technology side. The other stream will be more towards the business side of things. You know, people might be saying that, oh, it's easy to run a blockchain business. You know, you just need to read a few articles and you are an expert. Yeah, there are a lot of these big experts right now in the space. But in order to properly manage a blockchain business, I think it is also very suitable to have a course and a degree program, you know, teaching people, you know, what is blockchain? How can blockchain enhance your business? What kind of chains do you need to use? What is the difference between marketing a crypto project versus marketing a normal project? What kind of timeline and what kind of a speed are you looking at when you are looking at marketing a crypto project? I think these are all very basic things, but it's vastly different, you know, from the traditional business. You know, traditional businesses, for example, they look at different funnel, upper funnel, middle funnel, you know, bring in the marketing and just do the job, right? These are all very textbook based, right? If you are a centralized entity, for example, if you are a brand, you're like a FMCG goods, or even a centralized exchange, this model works very well, because these are all textbook style kind of a marketing plan, right? But if you are in the crypto space, and you're running a project, crypto project, the kind of pace that you got to go through are very different. The decision process is very fast. You need to have a very clear mind. You know, if you are in a normal traditional business, one day you can say A, another day you can say B, right? At the very last minute, you can flip again, it's C, but that's okay. But in the crypto side of the world, decision got to be fast, you got to be precise, and you learn to do that in school, not when you are in real life. Because only through stimulation, only through your professors, you can learn from mistake. Once you get out in the world, that one mistake could cost you millions of dollars. So I think such a curriculum can also be put in a degree program or even a master's program, right? And I think that process itself is very useful. Reason being is many of us, you know, and some of my friends in Africa or in Kenya per se, they have a passion in cryptocurrency. And if you have the passion, you study a degree program that is of your passion, you can excel. And if you are in that space itself and you turn out to be a more academic guy, for example, you might be doing research work that are talking about the next stages of decentralization. It could be a Web 4, it could be a Web 5, it could be a Web 6 or Web 8, for example. You could be the person who look at the perfect and ideal model for decentralization. These are all higher level research paper, you know. So I think schools make a very, very good place to have all these experts. You know, I'll give you another example. Friends in a lot of these developers who are doing crypto work, developers, they are all from India, for example, or from China, for example. You know, because they have that kind of environment to do it, you know. But what about Kenya? Kenya have some of the smartest people, you know, some of the best people who are looking at technology and experiencing digital money from the very young age. I still think that there is a very big, very, very big role for schools to nurture and grow these experts. Grow these experts for the local market, grow this expert so that you give the young ones in Kenya a better vision and more opportunities abroad.
Mm-hmm.
Because I see that, you know, local markets, abroad market, they can come back later. And that's how the whole economy is going to be formed. And I think, you know, there's a very big chance for Kenya to take on this entrepreneurship and this pioneer role, you know, within your region. And that is something that I want to emphasize, you know. If today the universities are not able to come up with a full blockchain education degree, start off with a module within the business electives, right? Or start off a module within the development or engineering electives. That is one baby step, you know, because right now at this current moment, to be real honest, there are not many schools who have full-fledged blockchain or crypto degree. There isn't many. So a baby step would be inputting them into the current business streams or engineering streams to give them a kind of sense on how this is going to work. You know, then you can have some EMBA courses that can train executives to look at cryptocurrency causes in a different manner. So this is a whole step that schools and institutions got to work together with, you know. We even have schools, you know, I can't name who right now at this moment, but we have schools in the kernel coming to me and say, hey, can you come out with a NFT cost? You know, what is non-fungible token? How is non-fungible token going to work, you know, for my ID or for my DID, for my passport? You know, governments are asking questions like this, you know. Schools got to train and come up with those experts, you know. And again, this process is not going to be one day process, you know.
Mm.
It can be 1 year, it can be 2 years, and it should be ongoing. And if you believe in innovation, if you believe in crypto, and you think that the blockchain technology is something that you can really put forth, put through, schools will be the best place to start. Really best place to start, you know. And nothing is going to stop us from studying or learning more. No problem at all. Sorry, I saw a lot of new questions coming popping up as well. you know, looking at Outlook and things like that. You know, I think you have a very, very active group of people, to be very honest, Dr. Tony. You know, mm-hmm. and that is the best place to nurture, you know, new projects, you know, put up a good value proposition to the schools, you know, get that going, you know. That's how I really look at things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, thanks very much. Local time will look like we've already gone past 4. It just moves very quickly. I think it's been a very useful engagement. And thanks, Andy, for sparing your time to you know, share your experiences and knowledge and aspirations as you see the trends within this area of technology and innovation. And thanks also for all the people who joined and the questions and the interactions. I'm sure you've learned something. So have I learned something. We'll continue to engage in one way or another, directly or indirectly. And you can always reach out to us in Kenya. Our email address is available on the website, and you can follow us on social media as well. I just noticed that, Andy, you have quite a lot of followers, and it's a reflection that this is a very interesting and engaging topic that people want to follow. And so we encourage you know, the participants here to follow you through as well, because I see you post quite a lot in this area. I mean, this is one of those topics you can't ignore, because you know, you keep seeing a trend. Things are evolving rapidly, and somehow you will interact with this kind of technology as we go forward. I think with that, we are coming to a close. Andy, I'll be seeing you in a couple of weeks in Singapore as we interact more and more with the startup ecosystem in Singapore and continue to build relationships. And we look forward to hosting you in Kenya sometime, hopefully not too far away. Otherwise, thanks everyone for joining, and have a nice evening wherever you are.
All right. Bye, everybody. Take care. Thanks, doctor.
Thank you very much.